Morning, everybody. If it's warm in here for anybody, we can open more windows. So many people, sometimes the body heat increases the temperature by about 5 degrees. So this morning, I want to talk about four practical components of Zen practice. Why not be practical once in a while? So I want to talk about managing mind critters, managing eating, managing sleeping, and managing time. Starting with mind critters. Mind critters. Anybody ever experienced critters coming through your mind? Unwanted critters? So, for years, my wife and I have had cats. I love cats. My wife loves cats. My kids got to love cats. But about 9 months ago, we made a decision to get rid of our cat, which I will not go into now. And, well, what happened? Well, some little mice droppings began appearing. Little mice droppings began appearing in the kitchen. So we tried to seal off entry points in the kitchen behind the cabinets. But a month or so later, they were still living in the crawl space. We could hear them back there. So mind mice, pests that reside in dark corners of consciousness. Difficult emotions, fears, upsetness, loneliness, sadness. Those mind mice can do a lot of damage if we don't see them. And regular mice and mind mice both can get through the tiniest holes. Have you ever noticed that? They get through the tiniest holes. Whether or not you're aware of their presence or not, they're gnawing at things. Gnawing. Tearing things up, creating a ruckus, just tiny little mice. How much ruckus one tiny little mouse can do? Anybody ever notice that? And we can't know much about our mind mice problem. Until we make an effort to see them, which is what we do in our meditation. We make an effort to see them. And I want to suggest three types of efforts that we make. One is we want to remove the sources of the food. Remove the sources of the food, which is pretty hard. That's why we'd have retreats at Zen Center, because usually in a 10-minute sitting or even a 15-minute sitting, it's hard to be close enough to the mind mouse, to the fear, to the concern, to really notice where it comes from and really be with it. But in a retreat, there's plenty of time to do that. Plenty of time. Second is sealing off entry points. How can we seal off the entry points to the mind mice? Well, we have our concentration meditation. We have our breathing. But sometimes they sneak in right through our breathing. In fact, periodically. In fact, almost continually, they're sneaking right in. going around and cruising through our breathing. How can we seal off entry points in more than just through our breathing? Our breathing is important. Well, we can repeat something to ourselves with our breathing, or hopefully in synchronize with our breathing. We can repeat something to ourselves. And it doesn't matter what we repeat. Something that helps us. Something that helps us come back and not be just overrun by mind mice. So maybe it was 20 years ago, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, I went a couple of times to see the hugging saint, Amichi. And I had a wonderful experience getting hugged by her together with 1,000 other people. Any of you know about her, this phenomena. And then, after that for a while, in my meditation when mind mice were coming in, I repeated, Ama, 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 which only means Ma in Hindu. Ma, 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 Ama, Ama, Ama. Now, you could say that I was worshiping her, but I don't think so. Just repeating something to give me comfort, to bring me back, and not be preyed upon too much by these mind mice, sealing up their holes. And also we can seal off the entry points by noticing the emotion and then noticing where it is in our body. If I'm scared of something, let's come back to my body. Where is it? Is it here in my throat? Is it warm here? Is it cold? Is it moving? Is it changing? Any emotion that we experience in our mind has a bodily component. By bringing it back to our body, by coming back to our body, we're grounding it. And we're actually sealing it off from getting tripped out on it. And we can also do our own self-guided meditations if we have too many mind mice. Right? We can do self-guided meditations. We can do loving-kindness meditation. Loving-kindness. Oh, geez, I tried the breathing. I tried the word repetition. I tried my body. Hell, nothing works. So then we're loving-kindness to ourselves. Loving-kindness to the mice. Loving-kindness to all beings. There are many different ways. The Buddhist tradition is really rich in practices we can do. Really rich. And you don't have to be a Buddhist to do this stuff. It's all. You can go online these days. Go online and find out about all this stuff. Far cry from when I began practicing. So, Linda and I got the pest guy to crawl around in the dark and seal up the holes about 6 months ago, I guess. But in this case, we're the only ones who can seal up the holes. We are the only ones who can shine the light on the holes, see where fear is making a nest. See where hatred's making a nest. See where impatience's making a nest. Just see it. Just see it with our loving kindness. With our loving kindness. With our bare awareness. But it has to include some kindness. It has to. It's not a mandate. It's just natural. 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 You see this little furry ball? If you really see it, you want to be kind to it. You don't want to just squash it. You want to be kind to it. You see that it's trying to breathe. It's trying to live, this fear. It's trying to live. It's gotten lost. That's why it's running all over the place. So you're kind to it, right? You're kind to it. And then after we seal up the holes, we need to... we notice that there are mice still in the crevices in between the walls. They're still there. We've sealed up all the holes. We've done such a good job. They're still all around. So what can we do? Well, we can poison them. We can trap them. And what happens when we poison them and trap them? They rot inside the walls. They rot. They rot. You'll experience this if you haven't. You'll experience this. They start to feel kind of putrid. Everything gets... because you're killing them. What you kill rots. So there's no need to do that. You can just release the mice. So we didn't do this in our house, but a couple years before we had squirrels. So we put live traps in the attic for the squirrels, and then Linda, my wife, went out and released them someplace far south. Not in this neighborhood. Some park far south. So we can do that with our mind mice, can't we? We can see and we can release. We can see the mouse. We can gently hold it. It's life. Just here. Just here. And then release. That's our life. That's our practice. And it takes discipline. It takes discipline. We have to work at it, right? We have to work at it. Time and time again. Sitting for 8 minutes every two days a week probably isn't enough. Probably you need to increase it. It takes discipline. You have to, has to be a high priority in your life. Well, sitting for 8 minutes two times a week is fine, too. Don't knock it. But if we're going to deal with these mice, and maybe you don't have a mice infestation, but I think you do. If you think you don't, I think you're totally out to lunch with your own psyche. But I guess you have a right to be out to lunch with your own psyche. It's okay. Well, I don't know if it's okay or not. I guess you have to decide. So the second mind critter I'm going to talk about are birds. Birds. So sometimes, especially in long sittings, maybe especially in retreats, I don't know, but for me it was especially in retreats, we go off on fantastical journeys. We don't even know. We're just going off onto a fantastical journey. A huge fantasy, and then the bell rings, and like 30 minutes has gone by. We've only been there for 1 minute. We've been on a fantastical journey. Maybe out to the Wind Rivers with our friends. Maybe up to the sky to see our spirit animals. You know, whatever. Well, and then there's another kind of... So I call those, I'm calling those for now, I call them before, mind eagles. Eagles soaring through the sky. Can we catch the sight of an eagle? When we catch the sight of an eagle, we just want to follow it. We want to fly with it. We want to be it. And then sometimes, on the other hand, we have mind buzzards. They just want to prey on everything. They just want to squash everything. They just want to devour everything. So, members of the aviary family on two sides of the spectrum, and my teaching about this is, they're all just pigeons. That's my teaching. They're all pigeons. They're all pigeons. We feed them, and we feed them so much that they behave like eagles or they behave like buzzards, but they're just pigeons. So, we can just notice the pigeons. Notice them without judging them too much, without worrying too much. Notice when we're seeing them, we're seeing them, the pigeon as an eagle or as a buzzard, and just not feed them so much. But still, we're kind to them because they are. And actually, pigeons even have some beauty. But we don't have to be soaring through the sky for 35 minutes of our zazen or in terror because they're just pigeons. They're just pigeons. Nothing to worry about. Just pigeons. So that's managing mind critters. Now managing eating. Managing eating. Well, eating. We spend a lot of our times eating. We spend a lot of our times thinking about eating. We spend a lot of time preparing eating. We spend a lot of time thinking about not eating. We spend a lot of time thinking about right eating and wrong eating. Right? We all do. We all do. Actually, when I was younger, not so much. I just ate. And I ate big portions. It didn't matter. My weight didn't change. I could eat sugar, everything. But not now. Not now. So, the right amount of eating. The right amount of eating. Not too much, not too little. And using eating as meditation. Following Gandhi's advice as much as possible. Drink our solids and chew our liquids as much as possible. Gandhi's giving us instruction on the meditation of eating. You guys have heard this, many of you, what Gandhi recommended. It's pretty cool. Try it. Try it. Try it. So then we have our nested eating bowls. How many of you have done a sesshin here? Raise your hand. I see, only about half, well, less than half people. Only in that room, only two people. That must be the beginner's room or something. So we have our nested eating bowls that we do in our traditional retreats. And we have three bowls. We have the first bowl, the large bowl, which is considered by some people Buddha's head. And we put the rice in Buddha's head or the lentils in Buddha's head. And then this is the grain generally. And then we have the second bowl. And the second bowl can have a variety of foods in it. And then we have the third bowl, the tiny bowl, which when I was young, people would put concentrated protein in it, like nuts and raisins. But now we do it all different ways. We have a creative Tenzo who does it all different ways, which is cool. So we have our three eating bowls, and we have our ritualized meals during our sesshins. Ritualized meals, like a dance, like a ballet. Highly ritualized. And servers come in and I put out my first bowl and they serve me. They get down while they serve me, so we're face to face. Then the second bowl they serve me, then the third bowl they serve me, and they do that to everybody in the room. And then we do a little chanting and we eat from the bowls. Then when we're finished eating from the bowls, the server comes around again and pours hot water in so we can clean the bowls. And we clean the bowls, and then what do we do with the water? Server comes around again and we give the server back the water and offer the water that we've washed to Buddha and all beings. So nothing is discarded. This is an ecological way of eating that goes back to the 13th century in Japan. Pretty cool, huh? Pretty cool. So, but we don't know what we're going to get in our bowls. We try to anticipate what we're going to get, but we don't know. So when the server comes, our bowl might get filled up with something that isn't so appealing to us. And we can say, stop. But if we can't taste it, we don't know how to. We don't get to talk. We have to say stop with our hand. We can say stop. So we have to kind of guess what's coming around, so that we get the right food, the right food. So this is a teaching. This is a Zen teaching. about teaching us to relate to what appears in our bowls, what appears in our bowl of life. Are we grateful to this little bit of brown rice? Do we want to spit out this very miso-y tofu? That he put a whole bottle of tofu in this miso, and I got to eat it all? I mean, a whole bottle of miso in the tofu, I've got to eat it all? Whatever. Do we want more? Do we want less? Do we gauge what we take upon what other based on what other people will think? Well, I better not take too much. Ted's not taking very much. I really like more, but if I've already had 3 times as much as him. I'm supposed to be the guiding teacher. I should have a meager amount, right? Meager. Do we do that? Do we do that? Oh, we do, probably. We do all these things. We do all these things. Oh, and if we're vegan, what happens? They serve us egg. We didn't know it was going to be egg. I couldn't tell it was going to be egg. You didn't put the bowl low enough, and I'm vegan. I'm not vegan, but... And then I got a big deal of scrambled egg in there. Then do I picture hens deprived of motherhood? Oh, oh. I have to eat it? It's in my bowl. It's in my bowl. This is life, you guys. This is life. Can we just be with what is? Can we just carefully and openly be and take care of and eat and digest what is? We can. We can. But it takes practice. It takes practice. For years, I was annoyed at fussy eaters in the Zendo during sashins. Fussy eaters. Both of my teachers said, you know, you eat what you get. And no special diets. So ever since then, everybody has seemed to have a special diet. More and more special diets. And very hard for the Tenzo, very hard for the Tenzo, very hard for the service. So I thought, geez, these people are just being silly with these special diets. They're not just accepting what is. Then what happened to me? What happened to me? Because of my Lyme's disease, my doctor put me on a very special diet. I thought, oh no. Oh no. What am I going to do? Maybe I won't sit sashin anymore. This was too embarrassing. But this is sometimes we get a very strange kind of food. A food that causes us to be embarrassed. We just have to be with it. We have an opportunity to be with it. To be with it. Even if it's against the etiquette, the protocol. How can we accept whatever life brings us? We can. And when our bowl is empty, we can see that the stillness, the great silence, right in the bowl, all cleaned of all the residue. All the residue is being cleaned out, and we've either drunk it or it's being taken out in the yard and dumped by the server. So it's empty. It's still. It's quiet. So the Zen practitioner Colleen Bush says, one time in a meditation intensive, I was moved to tears when I noticed how my bowls were empty when unwrapped at the start of the meal, then filled with food, then return to emptiness before I wrap them up again. Why did this make me cry? Because I realized that like my bowls, I was empty, then full, then empty or hungry again in endless cycles. It's kind of our life, isn't it? Kind of our life. So, when I'm preparing to give a talk, sometimes I have no idea. I just sit. I have no idea what to say. Seems like I've already talked about this, that, and the other. Do I want to do it again? I'm empty. I just have to sit there. That's okay, isn't it? That's okay, Tim, just to sit there when we're empty. just to be empty. Sometimes when I'm getting ready to talk, I get an idea, and my idea turns into eagles soaring throughout the whole world. Well, that's fine. I got all those eagles, but I have to rest those eagles down, see their pigeonness, their ordinariness, so that I help people feel their own ordinariness, the extraordinariness of their own ordinariness. So this is a rhythm of life, isn't it? After our cat, we got rid of our cat. Our cat didn't die. We gave away our cat. I don't like get rid of. Our cat moved on. After our cat moved on, I felt the empty house. I have no children or grandchildren in my house. I only have a wife. She's nice, but empty. Empty. Sadness. And I had to give away the uneaten food. Sadness. Empty. I didn't even feel like eating for a few days in my empty house. And when we're empty, can we just be empty? Can we just be empty? When we're full, can we just be full? Well, we're going to be empty again. Don't worry. Don't worry. If you do this practice, the mice are going to settle down. They are going to settle down. And then they're going to come back again. Because there are always more holes. Unless you live in some monastery for the rest of your life. But even then, monasteries are full of holes. They just look good on the outside. I tell you, they're full of holes. So I got back, as many of you guys know, from a trip to California, where I gave talks at 12 kind of major Buddhist centers, mostly Zen Buddhist centers, in part of California I'm from, Northern California. And I was very full. Oh, everybody was so nice to me. They acted like I was really a big deal. They even called me Roshi. Roshi, would you like this? Roshi, would you like that? Can I help you with this? Ooh! The guiding teacher beyond compare. When I came back, my first morning back, I went to Zazen here. There were three people in the Zendo. I was sitting with three people from 5:45 to 7 a.m., and we bowed to each other, we did our work, and we went home. And when I got home, my wife was gone, empty, completely empty. So, empty, full, full, empty. Nobody, somebody, somebody, nobody. It's life. Can we be with it? Can we just be with it? It's possible, isn't it? It's possible. Sometimes our food's too salty. Sometimes it's too sweet. Sometimes it's too bland. Sometimes it's too spicy. We can completely taste it, though, can't we? We completely taste it. And digest it, as Katagiri Roshi used to say. Digest it. Digest it. And the third managing aspect of life I'd like to talk about is sleep. Managing sleep. Managing sleep's important. We all know how important sleep is. Important. So historically, before electricity, people averaged, you guys may know this, but for electricity in European cultures, people averaged 9 to 10 hours of sleep. Sleep a night, 9 to 10 hours. Now, 6 to 7 hours. So that's interesting. How many hours? 3 hours less we got than people got before electricity. That must have something, some effect on our psyche, wouldn't you think? It has some effect on how much these mice get to us, I think. I think so. And then, of course, our teachers used to say that in meditation, if we meditate, well, we don't, for every half-hour meditation, we need a half-hour less of sleep. That's what they used to say, our Japanese teachers. So if we'd sit for 3 hours of meditation, we need 3 hours less of sleep. All right, that sounded pretty cool to me. I'm sure there's something to it. You guys could go online and find out about that. And we know the research says that as people get older, they tend to need less sleep for the most part. And we also know that especially with women, but both genders, but with women, beginning post-menopause, there is often a habitual disruption of sleep pattern. Likely hormonal. So can we be calm even if we have a disruption of our sleep pattern? Is it possible? There's an article in the New Yorker from last year that suggests it's all about insomnia, and it's about us not getting enough sleep. And it says in the article that the problem is not so much sleeping, that is not sleeping or not sleeping, as it is having a problem with not sleeping. So we think we should be not waking up every hour or two. And then it makes us anxious because we shouldn't be doing that. But they say that's more the problem than getting enough sleep. That's what this research shows. Now, maybe there will be some other research that will negate that. But very interesting, huh? Very interesting. So maybe we should try not to harden around the sense that we're waking up every hour or two. And just be with it. Just breathe with it. If you need to do light reading, do some light reading. Or listen to some music, or maybe it's fine. That's what the research suggests, it's fine. It's the anxiety about not being how we think we're supposed to be. That's the problem. And of course, in our Zen retreats, both of you have done them, know that most of our retreats are the way we learn to do retreats. I know they didn't do Hokyoji retreat this way. That way this year or last year, but I don't exactly understand why. But anyway, in most retreats, we get up early in the morning. We start sitting at 5:45, and our last sitting is at 9 o'clock at night. And people don't like that stuff because they're afraid they're going to get really tired and it's going to mess up their retreat. So they don't like it. So everybody's always advocating for later and later and later. But my teachers used to say that tiredness can help us soften and let go where we might harden and grip. And I've experienced this for myself. My first two teachers both said, just get up. Just get up and come to the Zen Center. So I did it. I did it foolishly for 40 years. I'm still doing it foolishly. Just get up. Just get up. Early morning meditation is what they taught. Now, of course, you can meditate any time. But in the early morning, there's a lack of buzz sometimes, of rushing to and fro, of no external noise. And often you're still groggy enough that your conscious mind doesn't get so activated. And then there's the dawn. The dawn has some effect on us. So, for more than 40 years, I got only 6 hours sleep a night, about, roughly. Well, that was pretty good. I thought I was pretty good. Then I got Lyme's disease. And so then for, I don't know, three to four years, I needed 12 hours sleep a night. Huh? Sometimes we're full and sometimes we're empty. We can just be with it, can't we? Just be with it. We can notice the mind mice coming in and saying, and just let them growl. Just let them growl. They're not as threatening as they look. They're just mice. Just mice. And just be with it. So the last one that I want to talk about, practical portion of our lives that I want to talk about is managing time. Managing time. So time. In 2015, time seems to be more of a burden for most people than certainly it used to be. More of an obstacle. More of a runaway train. More of like, I really want to meditate, but when will I fit it in? When will I fit it in? Seems like more people are wanting to meditate. Many more. Look at everybody here. But people are having a hard time fitting it in. Our long retreats, which is what where you can really do the work, less and less people come for the whole long retreats. There was an exception at Hokkyoji, but the last few years, less and less people. And yet more and more people want to meditate. But so that's very interesting, isn't it? And it has to do with our culture. And how time is pushing us. Time is pushing us. Our job, our iPhone, everything is pushing us. Pushing us. And so that's why it's important to simplify and slow down. But even that, even when we try to simplify and slow down, it's kind of hard, isn't it? Kind of hard. So then we can look at Dogen's suggestion for time management. For Dogen, time isn't so much an arrow between birth and death as it's all existence unfolding right now. Everything unfolding right now. And if you pay attention, you can experience this. You can experience what Dogen said. Time itself is being. Being itself is time. Meditation can correct seeing time as something that you have to manage. You can correct that. When we sit in meditation, even for 2 minutes, we're completely sitting inside time. Not ahead of it, not behind it. We're just here. We're just here. So in our retreats, and also just in our morning sitting on Sunday and our other days, we just follow the schedule completely. It's good even if you're If you wear a watch, it's good to take off your watch and just follow the timekeeper's cues. The timekeeper's going to ring the bell. You can just let time be in you. You don't need to be caught by this artificial convention, which is actually important, but nevertheless artificial. You just let time be in you. And experience time's flowing. It's always flowing. The light's always changing. It's getting dark. The seasons are always changing. So we can experience that, and that doesn't rush us. We don't get rushed by noticing how the light changes, do we? Noticing how the temperature of the air changes. That's not rushing. That's letting time be here, in you, not getting caught by this fabrication, this social fabrication, which even the Europeans think they don't get it. When I go to France, they just don't get it when I tell them about our lives. Well, they have their other hang-ups. You know, we all do. So the easy nature of movement, of everything moving, in a non-segmented way, and then we segment it, but let's not forget that we're doing that consciously. It's just something we're doing as a convention. So someone asked me when I was in California, everybody wanted to speak with a Roshi after he gave a talk. And I was looking around to see who they wanted to talk to, but it was moi. So, okay, you can speak with the Roshi. So somebody asked me, can a Buddha be in a hurry? And of course, yes and no. Yes and no. Sometimes we're in a hurry. I only have a little time to put my talk together. But if I just do it wholeheartedly, not worrying about it in front or behind, then it's in me. So I'm in a hurry, but I'm not in a hurry because I'm just doing it. I'm just doing it. And if it comes out a little rough, it comes out a little rough. Life is a little rough sometimes. Then I can teach about roughness. Right? There's always something to teach about just by being. just by paying attention. This morning we were sitting for 2 20-minute periods. Well, we used to sit for 40 minutes, but now we have a ding in between so people can stretch and other people can come in. So, beginning of that meditation, maybe you get a pain in your leg and your mind mice are just really agitated. Well, you can maybe move your leg a little bit, that's okay. But then you still have some agitation about something or other, and you want the bell to ring. Seems like that 20-minute sitting is like a 200-minute sitting or a 2,000-minute sitting. And sometimes you have a wonderful sitting. You will. If you've never had a wonderful sitting, you will. You'll have a wonderful minute or 2 minutes. What seems like no time at all, every time at all. Very pleasant. And then the bell rings. And it's over. It's over. So time doesn't seem to be like it's on our side. It's always messing with us. But that's the time that we've created. Inside us is time. We're inside time. So we're okay, aren't we? We're okay. We don't need to get caught by this convention. It's an important convention. It's only a convention. So at any moment, wherever you are, if you feel like you don't have enough time, notice what's going on. Notice, time is passing me by. I don't have enough time to get this done. Then breathe. And know that you are the unfolding of all moments. You are. This breath is. This breath is. Now you're here, and in 10 minutes you're going to be there. And then is now, and now is then. Right here, right here. So when you breathe in, you don't have to hold it. And when you breathe out, there's plenty of room to breathe in. Plenty of room to breathe in. Coming, going, rising, falling, emptying, filling, filling, emptying. So those are comments that I want to make about these four practical aspects of Zen life. Mind critters, eating, sleeping, and time. And now there is time to see if there are questions or concerns or comments or stories or whatever, because there's plenty of time.
I've got a story.
Pardon?
I've got a story.
Okay.
So this was a few years ago, maybe more than a few years ago. They go by pretty quickly now. But we were cleaning up at Dharma Field, and you know how you did when you do a cleanup? There's always parts where you go, oh, geez, it's going to be so nice to clean up. It's been this way for so long. So it was one of those things where every room got cleaned up. And I remember I was in the kitchen and I was arranging all the drawers. I'm like, oh, now all things are in their place. I'll be able to find them really easily. And then the storeroom is right next to it. So we cleaned out in there and I got this one big barrel that was in the back and a lot of grass seed in there. So it was mice had gotten in there. All the paper is all chewed up. It's okay. So we cleaned that all up. And then, you know, when you get to the end of a job, out next week when I come, it was a nice little kitchen. So the next week I come and I start opening up the drawers in the kitchen. And in every drawer there's mouse poop. So when we took the grass seed out of the storeroom, so we solved this one big critter problem. But then the critters came back everywhere.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. Thank you. Other people. Other people. Sure. Can you speak loud enough so maybe those folks in the next room can hear you?
In reference to time, in the trees, in metaphor for our lives, retreats are, of course, challenging in a lot of ways, but they are easy in certain ways because of the schedule, because everything has been planned. In that sense, I feel like our lives are not retreats. We can't just go about being in every moment without having been ours. Go on, right? The person who runs retreat finds it out.
Yes. Yes.
Now, there's a lot of work that goes into planning and running a retreat, so it feels like the ability to be in that moment is being your own good planner. And any thoughts on the if planning is Zen and the Zen of planning?
So he wants to know, could you guys hear him? Well, he says that in retreats, everything's set up for you. You don't have to think about time. But most of our life is not in retreats. And he was wondering if there's a Zen of planning or a planning of Zen. And I would say yes. In my job that I just retired from just last November, I made a list every morning of things that I wanted to accomplish during the day. And I would keep that list and revise it day by day and modify it. But I went over it every morning. I prioritized, I reprioritized. But that's fine. We can do that. We have that wonderful mental capacity to do that. And then we can just do it and let it alone. I don't have to get agitated. I don't have to worry about my list and what I'm getting everything accomplished. I've already prioritized. Maybe I'll need to go back and reprioritize, but I can do it while I breathe. I can do it while I'm present. And planning, it's a very good point. Planning is crucial to our lives. But if we can see that all time is included in our breath, then we don't get wigged out by the fact, oh, gee, I can't do these 18 things. I'm only going to do 8. Oh, I'm only doing 3 today. That's fine. I'm going to breathe. Well, I'll do 3. I only do 1. Oh, geez, I didn't get even 1 done. But I engaged my planning faculty when I was planning, and once I planned, I let it go. I let it go. But that's very important. Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. Thanks. Other people. Benton.
I like what you said about the study that's about not worrying about not sleeping.
Uh-huh.
And I've had a lot of insomnia in the last few years, and I found that that really helps. And ironically, when I'll just lay in bed, and if I'm not sleeping, I'll say, just no big deal. And once I convince myself that it's not important that I'm not sleeping, I sleep.
Good. Yes.
It's hard sometimes, though.
It is. Yep. Andrea.
In the part of your talk about eating.
Yes.
And having food in your bowl that you really don't want.
Yeah.
What if you have food in your life bowl day after day?
So her question is, when you have food in your life bowl that you really don't want and it just stays full of that same food hour after hour, day after day, and you don't want it, how do you deal with it? Well, I don't think there's I don't really have an answer to that. I have two things to say about that. One is that when we get food in our bowl day after day that we don't want, we need to get help from our friends. We need to reach out. We feel alone with this food. Day after day, I get this cat food in my dish. I can eat it. The cat food sustains me, if you know it does. But God, that's all I've got is cat food. I need to get help from my friends. I need to reach out. I need to get support. I need to engage them. I need to be humble and say, help. help. And maybe they'll have ideas about this. They'll have ideas about how I can gradually introduce some other food into my diet, or how I can deal with this immense mass of cat food that just is always there. We need to help. We need to get help from each other. We need to be humble, and we feel alone when we have too much food and everybody else seems to be okay. We always feel that everybody else is okay, but in situations of extremity, we feel more that way. So can we reach out? Can we reach out to a friend, a mentor? And of course, we're so isolated in this culture. You know, we don't have extended family anymore. People move around so much. Again, other European cultures don't get this culture. There are wonderful things about this culture, but our isolation means that we have to reach out. If you guys want to keep a meditation practice going, engaging with others who are doing it is really important. But whatever it is. So that's the first thing, reaching out, getting support. And not just thinking to yourself, oh, I should accept this. Well, if you think you should accept this, then you're not really opening your heart. You're just, you're getting caught by your should. But noticing, maybe you have a sense of obligation. I have a sense of obligation to my cat who's gone to eat her food. Well, I loved her so much, I'm empty, you know, and here's all her food and it's nutritious, so I feel an obligation. But if then I turn that into a mandate, I should eat her food, I get caught by that mandate because we're trying to be good. We're trying to be good. So there's an exception to every rule. And the rule that we should just eat what's in our bowls, the exception is that sometimes food in our bowls is not very healthy and we need to reach out to others to get support. Okay. Sure. Okay, thank you. Thank you.